Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. This is the 19th episode of the Master the Start podcast presented by GoMahi.com. And we've got a great episode ahead for all of you. Today, our awesome, talented guest is Alex Lieberman. He is an absolute champ. He is the proud co-founder and CEO of The Morning Brew. The Morning Brew is a new media company bringing you informative and digestible business news every single morning. They educate 975,000 plus readers on the latest news from Wall Street to Silicon Valley daily. So make sure, if you haven't already looked into The Morning Brew, this is a little plug for them, let them occupy a little space in your inbox this very morning. Alex is only 25 years old. He was lucky enough to win Forbes 30 Under 30 in media. This is going to be an awesome podcast. Like always, most importantly, what do I always say? You need to settle in. You need to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Make sure you check it out, possibly on Spotify, iHeart, or Google Play. Make sure you do it. And then also, please, 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 I see the comments and you haven't left any. So make sure you leave us a comment on your thoughts about the show. It can be good. It can be bad. We do not care. We just want to hear your advice, your feedback, anything of that nature. And enjoy this week's show of Master the Start. Welcome to the show. Appreciate it. Took some time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Thanks for being patient.
I was so excited because I was like, I'm going to have him on the show. We had it figured out. And then I was like, crap, I'm going out of town for 2 weeks. Yep. Then I come back, you become a big deal. And yeah, I just assumed that you won the Forbes 30 Under 30 in media. And you're like, you know what? I got bigger things.
No, unfortunately or unfortunately, that's not the way I think. So like, it was a nice little milestone, but those have never been the things that that motivate me. I have very simple motivations in life, and I guess like the vanity things, like the Forbes thing, are nice reminders that we're building something interesting, really cool. Honestly, I'm most excited about it because of the people that I'm going to get to meet through it, not the actual like recognition itself.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we should probably start at the beginning. Yep. What in the world is The Morning Brew? Who is Alex Lieberman? Why should people love you? Why should people become obsessed with The Morning Brew? Because I personally am. I wasn't 2 months ago, and now I love it.
How did you find out about it, by the way?
It was definitely my brother. He was like, I read this thing every morning. It's dumb if you don't. And I was like, fair enough. I'll give it a try.
That's awesome. No, I love to hear that. Yeah, so, you know, very simply, the goal of Morning Brew is to better engage our generation with the business world, to get our generation excited and feel related to with business. And my co-founder Austin and I started the company when we were students at the University of Michigan. So the long short of it is, you know, we were both finance people through and through. I'm originally from New Jersey. My entire family worked on Wall Street. My dad was a trader at Citigroup. Mom was a salesperson at Nomura. Grandpa worked at Prudential. Like, I was always planning on getting into financial services. And so at some point I went to Michigan because I was just like, this is what's going to help me achieve my ultimate goal, which for the first 15 years of my life, or no, 18 years, was being the best trader in the world. And so I got into senior year, was lucky enough that I had my job offer to work at Morgan Stanley full time. I only had to take two classes my entire last year of school. So I was just like, I need to do something to pass the time so my brain doesn't spontaneously combust. And so I started helping kids prep for job interviews, worked with between 75 and 100 kids. And I would always start these conversations by asking, how do you keep up with the business world? And every single student would have the same canned answer. They would say, you know, I read the Wall Street Journal, and I read it because I feel like I have to, because it's a prerequisite to say I'm well-read in business, but it's dense, it's dry, and I can't get through the journal cover to cover. It takes too long. And at some point I was just like, this is crazy. These kids are working their asses off to have careers in business, whether it be real estate, financial services, marketing and advertising, consulting, yet they don't have content that storytells the business world in a fun and engaging way. And so I literally just started writing a daily business roundup, which at the time was called Market Corner. It looked like absolute shit. There was no website. It was a PDF attachment to an email. After this, I can send you what the OG morning brew looked like. And I basically would spend 4 hours a day, every day, my first semester senior year, writing this newsletter. And a lot of the components of Market Corner acted as the foundation for what Morning Brew is now. So like what I would do is I would comb through 15 to 20 of the top primary business news sources. I'd decide, okay, what are the 5 to 7 stories that the college business student would care about? And I would write these 150 to 250 word digestible blurbs that read like we're talking right now. I would do a stock pitch of the day, an interview question of the day, an inspirational quote of the day, very into those. And so I just started by sending this out to 45 people. So the original list went to 45 people, including my family, the kids I lived with at Michigan, and the people I was helping to prep for job interviews. And after that, you know, really fascinating thing started happening, which was I started getting emails or text messages from people saying, hey, I heard this about this daily business roundup that you write. Can you add me to your listserv? Like I was managing a listserv. Again, there was no website. And by the end of first semester senior year of Michigan, the entire business school was signed up for Market Corner. And to me, that's where I was like, okay, there's really interesting appetite for this because, like I said, the product looked like shit. There was infinite friction to sign up for it since I had to sign you up. And yet somehow all these business students were reading the newsletter. And so took winter break of my senior year. So this was between 2014 and 2015 to just think about, okay, how do we take this to the next level? And so what we did was, one, I brought on Austin Reef as my co-founder. Austin's the COO of Morning Brew, and he's an incredible partner in this. And the reason I brought him on at the time was he's 2 years younger than me. I graduated 2015. He graduated 2017. And he was the only person that was one of the early readers of Market Corner and every day would respond with feedback of saying, like, what could be better about this and his thoughts. And to me, someone who was 19 years old at the time, who had the objectivity to both be really intellectually curious and read the product every day and be a consumer, but also know that it wasn't most helpful to me as someone creating this product to just hear how great it was and for me to give myself a pat on the back. That's someone I wanted to surround myself with. And so brought him on. We launched our core product in March of 2015, which is, as you know, a daily email newsletter that gives you all the business news you need in 5 minutes. It's quick, it's conversational, covers everything from Alphabet to Airbnb to Saudi Arabia to Chinese tariffs. And the whole goal is you read Morning Brew to be the smartest person in the room and have to have a smart conversation around business. And it's just like the name implies, it's the thing that gets you going in the morning. You read it because you want to, not because you have to.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Thanks, man. So why email? Like legitimately, yeah. Everyone's moving away from email and you're crushing it.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think it's funny because people oftentimes talk about like luck and how much emphasis people put on luck versus skill. And I've always been a believer in like you make your own luck. But I think you make your own luck to put yourself in the position to experience luck. And what I mean by that is this would have never happened if we didn't take the initiative to write this newsletter, to, you know, start putting it out every day, to think about how do we grow this, to think about what's a problem in the market. But the way that email has trended over time is lucky in the sense that it has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger since we first launched this. You know, candidly, at the time when we launched the brew, we only had a few options. It was like email newsletter, blog/website, podcast. Podcasts weren't huge yet. We weren't huge listeners of podcasts and we wanted to be on a platform where we knew our consumer lived. Email and blog felt, you know, not that it was antiquated, but it felt like everything was moving away from destination websites. Like if you just think about how often do you just go type in the URL for a website now, it's way less frequent than what it was 5 years ago. And with email, our view is just one, it's where our consumer lives, which at the time was the college student interested in business. We knew like college students were on their email constantly. And then the other component to it was that it was respectful of someone's time in the sense that given the structure of an email and the finality of it, it could only be so long. And as a 5-minute read in an age where like it is truly an attention economy where people don't have more than 5 minutes to read something, it forced us into a structure that I think that was in line with how people were starting to consume content and the lack of time that people had to consume content. And the third component was just like being very objective about, we didn't have money. Running an email newsletter is extremely cheap. Our only cost was MailChimp at the time. Like, our business cost somewhere between $100 and $300 for a year and a half. So I think that was the other big thing, was it was very low cost. And our whole view was, ultimately, if we did end up monetizing it, just the business model of a newsletter scales very well, because you only have so much cost on the people creating the newsletter and the technology behind the newsletter. But as you grow your audience and you charge your advertisers based on the size of your audience, the margin of your business continues to expand.
That makes a lot of sense. I think it'd be very interesting if we kind of dive into the early days, because you're one of the few people on our show that is actually very close to those early days. Like, you can remember them. So I'm going to bring something up, because I was looking, I was just looking up stuff for the Morning Brew, and I saw that you were on, what is it called, Patreon at one point?
Yeah, we were.
And you were trying to get people to donate money to the Morning Brew to stay alive, and I love stories like that. How did that work?
Yeah, so it's funny. Patreon is something we haven't put emphasis on in a long time, but, you know, given the short history of the business, you know, it feels like yesterday that we were doing it and thinking about it. And I think the reason we started doing Patreon was, again, we wanted, in the early days, we just wanted to start experimenting with, conceptually, about what media or content these days are people willing to pay for? Like, what are the things that make someone be open to paying for content? And I think taking out of the equation, like, Netflix, Hulu, the high production value content, what else are people willing to pay for? And so I think it was us trying to start figuring that out. The other was that while we thought we could build a robust advertising business, we also wanted to test what other models could we monetize the business on, and also just how engaged was Morning Brew's audience, because at the end of the day, Patreon, as the name implies, is a patronage model. It's people donating to brands that they have a deep love and affinity for. To give you an example, like, Patreon is built for, like, artists, creators, right? And one of the most successful Patreon accounts is Wait But Why, which is Tim Urban's blog. And Tim Urban is one of, like, the most prolific bloggers and content creators out there. You know, he became famous. So his blog posts are basically novels in themselves. They take dozens of hours to read. He comes out with one maybe every quarter to 6 months, and he became known for his series that he wrote on Elon Musk, where he basically pulled back the curtain, went and visited Elon in person, and did this long series that effectively was a book. And if you look up his Patreon, he is bringing in tens of thousands of dollars per month of people who love Tim Urban to fund his business. So while Patreon isn't something that we really put emphasis on now, I think for us, it was a really good test in the beginning, just to see, like, the way I evaluate, you know, good media companies now that I think have long-term prospect is, like, people's give a shit meter. Like, do people give a shit about you? If your content was to go away tomorrow, would they feel like they're missing out? And I think one of the best ways to kind of test that is, one, would people be willing to pay something for your content? Or the other test I have in my mind is, are people willing to buy swag that has your company branded on it? Because if someone's willing to buy something that has your company's name on it and wear it around, clearly they take pride and feel a part of what you've built.
Yeah, that is true. So how in the world do you keep the same voice through all of your emails?
Yeah, so I would say 90% of it is art, 10% of it is science. And what I would say, the reason I say 10% is science is, like, we've kind of codified who Morning Brew is. We were very particular about, like, literally making Morning Brew a person and describing a real person, first name, last name, like, their habits, where they live, where they work, what they're interested in, who their friend group is, how often they go out, ad nauseum. Like, we did that at first to then build our voice around that person. And so, without naming the exact person it is, because it's literally a real human being, the way I describe it is, like, Morning Brew is your smart and sociable friend that is, like, the friend in the friend group who gets the joke, but also is deeply intellectually curious. It's the person who, you know, if your friends go out four nights a week, he or she is going out two nights a week and loves to have a good time, but also loves to stay in two nights and either listen to the most recent How I Built This or, read the financial statements of a company that they're looking to potentially invest in. Or someone who likes to watch a TED Talk or documentaries. And it's the person that's so passionate about learning and so deeply curious that one, they know how to go down the rabbit hole and truly gain mastery on the things they want to learn about. But because they know it so well and they're so passionate about it, when they explain it to their friends, that passion exudes itself on other people and gets them equally as excited about the topics that they're talking about. So that's the voice. And we basically codified it in like a style guide into kind of the four or five personality traits of this person. And our writers, which I'll talk about in a sec, they don't reference like this style guide on a daily basis, but it exists as a reminder for them to periodically look at. But I think it's most important for as we scale the business into other things to make sure that we have a consistent voice. Anyone we onboard to the company will absolutely use that as a guide in the beginning. I think so much of the voice is also based on the writers that we have on our staff. Pretty crazy, but like two people are writing this business newsletter every day. They're spending 12 hours a day writing for almost a million people. And it's just two human beings. They're unbelievable. And they have such diverse backgrounds. And I think one thing that we put emphasis on is when we were evaluating, like, what do we need to hire for when we hire our writers? And they're like all these different things. It's like industry knowledge, technical writing skills, background in journalism, voice and wit, ability to learn, like curiosity and the ability to obtain expertise on something that they're not an expert in. And I think those last two, voice and intellectual curiosity for us, were so much more important than like journalistic background. Because I think in a lot of ways, having a journalism background in typical business reporting is really important because there's certain guidelines by which you have to write as just a reporter, whether it be at the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, The Economist. But for the type of writing we do, I actually think it's a really bad way to be trained because, again, we're writing 150 to 350 word blurbs that read like a conversation. You don't have a ton of space to write. Like, our writing is the definition of brevity and conciseness and writing in a casual nature. And that is not at all what you're taught to do when you're taught in journalism. So it's not a coincidence at all that our managing editor was never a professional writer. He studied history. Then he got his master's in urban planning. And then he worked for like the state government in New Jersey. And he was just a writer for his school paper in Maryland. But his intellectual curiosity, his wit, and his just natural writing chops, you couldn't replicate it. And then our other writer, while she has a journalistic background, she also has a deeply creative side, which I think was a necessary opposing force for the fact that she studied journalism. So we were really purposeful about the type of people we hired, and it's obviously not common, the type of people we hired being a news media organization.
How do you pick your content? What is the process every single day to get you to that email?
So I think it's a combination of one, understanding for who our reader is, you know, the aspiring, affluent, emerging business leader, the mid to high 20s worker who's in finance, technology, consulting, healthcare, who's fashion forward, who's tech forward, who lives in a big city. Like, what does that person care deeply about? So I think there's kind of like three criteria. One is, what stories will our demographic genuinely care most about? Like, you know, our readers generally care more about like consumer retail and technology and e-commerce more than they care about like macroeconomics or the Federal Reserve or, you know, commodities. Not saying those things aren't important, but I think it's really important to think about what the balance of covering those stories is. I think the other thing is asking ourselves, how long is this story going to be important for? Is this story going to be important for more than just 24 hours? Is it going to be important for our demographic to know about for the next 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months? Does this hit on a larger trend that our demographic needs to understand and care about? And I think the third component is balance, like how all these stories work together to create, to have like a certain dance and flow to them. When you read through the newsletter, like it feels like there's rhythm to it. And I think the topics you pick and the stories you pick, they need to not only just play off themselves and have importance to themselves, but they need to play off the other stories that are in the newsletter. Cause there's like, I mean, I use the word dance, but there's a flow to the newsletter you need to feel when you read through it.
Have you seen the demographic change over time?
Yeah. It's, when we first started, it was pretty exclusively college students. And that was just by way of, we were college students. The strategies we were using to grow our audience was all college based. So our campus ambassador program, announcements we were making at Michigan's campus, word of mouth, but word of mouth was only in the college network, people sharing on social media, but generally just in like the college sphere. And as we've grown over time, I think it's the combination of us aging, us now not working on it from a college campus, but also like our ambassador program is still an incredibly important thing because we think it's so important to build habit reading Morning Brew when you're a college student. Because if you build that habit when you graduate from college and you start your job, you don't have to change anything. You can just keep reading the Brew on your, you know, your morning commute the same way you were reading it on the way to class at school. But now we look at these other ways that we acquire subscribers, whether it's paid social, whether it's us buying advertising in other email newsletters, whether it's cross promos with other media businesses or newsletters, whether it's earned media through, you know, articles on TechCrunch or things like this. Naturally, we're starting to tap into an older demographic. So the demo went from originally our average reader was 20 years old to now our average reader is 28 years old, which I think makes sense. But I think it's also important for us to know that we can't ever lose emphasis on the college reader, because the reason we have so many 24, 25-year-old readers right now is because 4 years ago when we first started this, the 25-year-old is our college reader from 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happened in the last 10 months that made you go from an email newsletter that had 200,000 subscriptions to what are you at, like 900 now?
Yeah, we'll be at 1 million subscribers within the next 20 days. So yeah, the way I describe it is 2018 was the year of exponential growth and the year that kind of all the pieces started to fit together. And I think to explain why it makes sense, it's important to step back and like look at the trajectory of the business, because in reality, Austin and myself have been full-time on this business for 2 years. While we started in college, like I went and worked in finance for a year and a half. Austin was still a student. So I went full-time on the business in September of 2016. Austin went full-time on the business in April or May of 2017. And so really 2017 for us was just figuring out like, what the hell do we do now? it takes time to just like mentally strategize the business. And so, you know, we knew that there was opportunity here, and we founded this business on a few core tenets. One was that legacy business media was dense, dry, didn't resonate with the young business person. The other was that legacy business media companies don't create content for the young person / they don't have incentive to, because while long-term they will have incentive, call it the Wall Street Journal will have incentive for us to be their reader. Right now they don't, because their average reader who's 55 years old and who's been working in business for 30 years, they're still a way more valuable consumer than we are. That was one thing. The other thing was that everyone said that media is a horrible industry to get into, because there's so much content and so much competition out there. Our view was that's not true. It's very competitive and there's so much content, which actually is a huge opportunity for someone like us, which basically sifts through all of the BS and tells you what you need to know. We're basically, a lot of our value is not just the way we present the content, but saving the search time that you take to find the right content. And I think the other thing that was a main principle of the business is, at the end of the day, we were all about building a fundamental business with a great product, with an audience that gives a shit about us. And as we thought about it, it was like, we thought, how many media businesses overall have truly built an audience that obsesses over them? I still go through this exercise all the time of thinking about, what are media businesses that people feel deep brand love for? And it's always the same three or four. And to us, that was really exciting. The idea of not only an incredibly valuable demographic, but while media is so crowded, it's crowded with a lot of players that don't actually have people who deeply care about them. And so our whole view was we needed to build a business that had deep brand affinity, not only so there's just like long-term prospects and so that we can monetize it through advertising, but our whole view was if we build true community, we can also monetize in ways that traditional media businesses don't monetize down the road. So 2017 was basically like thinking through, okay, these are all our principles. How do we build a strategy around that? And the second was raising money, because at the end of the day, we needed to fund the business. We weren't monetizing through advertising yet, and we needed to start bringing people on. And so for us, what 2017 got us to was the idea of we need to complete this three-step cycle where our sole focus is on this business newsletter. Like, this is our first point of contact with the reader. We need to build trust with them. The way we're going to do it is through three steps. First is great editorial. The second was great growth strategies that are both sustainable, scalable, and allow us to grow really quickly, but with quality readers. The third was we need to build up a great audience, do that through great content, and then be able to tell the story of Morning Brew's reader and that Morning Brew lifestyle to sell it to brands. And so 2018 was basically the year where all that whole three-step process came together. So we went from four people on our team in January of 2018 to 11 now. We went from four advertisers in January of 2018 to over 50 advertisers. And we went from 100,000 subscribers on January 1st of 2018 to over 900,000 now. And 2019 is going to be a huge year with building out new product and diversifying our readers' eyeballs and their attention, as well as how we monetize the business through advertising outside of just our one core newsletter.
I want to get into your, you've only raised one round.
Yep.
And what was it?
We raised a convertible note, and it was $750,000 round from just individual investors, not professional angels, not institutions. You know, the story behind that is when we were first doing Market Corner, remember that original newsletter I was telling you about back in the day, we started doing like a weekly interview with just a business leader. Cause my whole thing was like, let's find a way to better connect business leaders with aspiring business leaders through great storytelling through an interview. And so just leveraging the Michigan network and my high school network and just cold reaching out to people, started interviewing people on a weekly basis. And so, you know, that was first semester, my senior year. So this was fall of 2014. So in early 2017, so 2.5 years later, when we were going to raise a round, the way we thought about it was just very linearly, like point A is we have zero money right now. Point B is we need money. What is going to be the vehicle to get us there? And our whole view is like, we didn't have any institutional contacts / we really didn't want to be beholden to VC investors. We didn't know any professional angels. And we're like, we know a bunch of people that helped us get our business off the ground that believe in us. So we had a spreadsheet of all those original people we interviewed back in the day. And we just started reaching out to them saying, you know, we're raising a small round just for individual investors. You helped act as a launch pad for this business. And we want you to be a part of the ride where we basically make business news great and exciting and engaging for future business leaders. And so 75% of our investors are either people that we interviewed or like friends of people that we interviewed.
Wow, that seems pretty pretty easy, but was it as easy as you make it sound?
Absolutely not. It was a 4 or 5 month process. I will say we were lucky in the sense of I don't know what pitching a VC is like. It
horrible.
Sounds like it's an absolute grind. So I think it's all relative. It was a long process for sure. And the whole thing about fundraising is it's a necessary, but it diverts so much attention. So it diverted so much of our attention and time. But I think relatively speaking, from the war stories that I've heard about fundraising institutionally, I will say I think we did have it easy, relatively speaking.
So were you doing like individual pitches to all these guys?
Oh, yeah, to all of them.
How'd the first one go?
First one was good. It was in a coffee shop in Brooklyn with actually an incredible investor of ours. His name's Rob Marcus. He used to run Time Warner Cable, and he's been such a great supporter and mentor of the business. And honestly, I think I blacked out while I was talking because I should remember my first pitch and I don't at all remember what I said. But, you know, clearly either we created the illusion that we were doing something right or he could see something in us that we didn't see in ourselves. But, you know, it's worked out for everyone.
So you made it work and pitch one. Lucky you.
Yeah.
Before we get to the quick fire questions, now I'm just really curious about what's your thought moving forward? Are you only going to be a morning email? Or are you? Do you have this idea as a CEO, like you're the leader, you said you're going to diversify. Are you thinking about doing different things? You don't need to tell me what those are, but what's the thought process behind it?
Yeah, so like I was saying, 2019 is the year that we diversify our readers' attention. We diversify the ways in which our readers can consume content. And we diversify our advertising revenue, because I think a big thing that also is a misconception is people say like advertising is dying. And they assume like all advertising is created equal. And that's not true. If you want to put affiliate in the advertising bucket, affiliate is so incredibly different from performance advertising, like direct response advertising, which is so incredibly different from brand awareness advertising. The advertiser is different. Their goals and measures of success are different. Who you're talking to is different. And so I think there is a ton of diversification to be had within the umbrella of advertising before we move into other things. Our goal is, at the end of the day, very simple. We want to get our audience excited about the business world. We want to teach them about business in a way that is engaging, relatable, and makes things the complicated simple. So if I look at what our core newsletter is, It basically goes a mile wide and an inch deep, giving you the best, most holistic overview on what's going on in business every day for you to have a smart conversation around business, to give you a sense of where we're going. One of the things that our readers always ask us for is they're like, I love your newsletter, but when I read a story, I want to go deeper on that story that I care really deeply about. And up until now, they will have to leave Morning Brew's ecosystem to go read more through their own searching or through the links that are included in our newsletter. And so what we're doing first is we're going deeper on the topics our readers care most about. So we're going to be verticalizing the business in the sense of launching industry-specific newsletters. So we're going to be launching emerging technology as our first newsletter and a few others. And the whole idea is building passion audiences within these subcategories of business. It also makes us learn, like, for the technologist, for the person who's interested in healthcare, for the real estate professional. Like, not only what do they care about that they want in their, you know, daily or twice a week newsletter, but what are things they care about that we can create in addition to that? So almost building businesses around these new newsletters that we create around specific audiences. So that's what we're starting with. But we do see a lot of opportunity in the way of thinking of our business, not just purely as a media business, but as a business. At the end of the day, who are we? We are a business that has become the gatekeeper of both attention and trust for a very valuable demographic. And when you do that, in a lot of ways, if you don't look at our content as just like news content, what we've effectively done is created a very large, very engaged free marketing channel. And when you do that, it leaves a lot of opportunity to create value for readers that isn't necessarily just daily email newsletters.
How do you market? Like, legitimately, what has been the thing that's been absolutely amazing for you guys when it comes down to marketing? What hasn't worked at all?
Yeah, so, you know, we're really lucky in the sense that a ton of our audience growth is still organic. So like 45% of our reader base has been acquired through organic means. So 25% is through our referral program. So Morning Brew's referral program is massive, not only because those are all effectively free subscribers, but also when we pay for new subscribers, you just know that one subscriber that we acquire is worth a little bit more than one subscriber, because some percentage of our readers are going to go through our referral program and branch Morning Brew out to their network. So our referral program has been huge. Word of mouth has been huge, just like direct traffic to our website, which I think is amazing, given that we have one thing we haven't spent any time on, which I think there is opportunity, is SEO. We've literally done nothing in the way of SEO. And so getting organic traffic to our site, the fact that that still happens is mind-blowing to me. And then we have the whole paid acquisition side. And things like Facebook and Instagram have been massive for us. We do a ton in paid social every month, and we've gotten really good at really siloing the data for every reader based on the channel they come through and understanding where we're getting our most high quality subscribers from, not just looking at the acquisition cost of subscribers, but looking at how much does it cost to get a great subscriber. But then we always have a budget that's set aside for, you know, experimental, and experimental is generally where the shit shows happen. Everything from like Quora and Reddit advertising, which went miserably, to at some point doing LinkedIn advertising. As much as I love LinkedIn, their ad platform is not where they focus their time, which makes sense for what their product is, but not good for us. We also did subway Wi-Fi advertising. So like in New York City, the subway system has Wi-Fi now. And I think a lot of people don't even realize that. But now what happens is if you go on the subway and you go to like the transit wireless Wi-Fi, when you click to sign onto the Wi-Fi, it pops up with like a screen that says, okay, like put your email address in to get connected. And there's a pop-up that comes up for Morning Brew. That did not go well either. But I think, you know, that's as to be expected. If those things aren't happening, we are not pushing the boundaries enough to really find interesting new channels where our readers live that we didn't know that's where they live. In general, it's been a really nice flywheel that we've created of showing brands how engaged our audience is and why brands need to get in front of our audience, and effectively using the ammunition of money from our brands to invest it back in the business in two ways. It's either towards audience growth through paid acquisition or to hiring more people.
I've been happy to see the Morning Brew show up in my Instagram every once in a while now as an advertisement. The little text messages get me real excited.
Yeah, the text creative has done really well, but we've used it for about the last 6 months, so I think it's time to change things up.
Let's do the quick fire questions quick. First off, we usually have one random question from our audience. And believe it or not, your question that was picked is not even that random. What is the funniest corporate / business screw up you've made at the Morning Brew?
While at Morning Brew?
Or just like, maybe just you personally.
Yeah, so I mean, the most embarrassing / horrific screw up I had was, I am notoriously late to things. But this was back when I was an intern at Morgan Stanley, and it was my junior year summer internship. And the way it works in finance is you have your summer internship after junior year. Hopefully you get a full-time offer for after college, which means during senior year, you have your job in hand. You don't have to worry about it. And that's the last day of your internship. You have an exit interview, which means like you don't work that day. You literally are just given a slip of paper the night before that says your time for your exit interview. And what the exit interview is literally you go to like the 35th or 36th floor of Morgan Stanley. You sit down in an office with HR, with your boss and some other people, and they basically just tell you whether you've received an offer or not. And so my slip said 11:15, and I was like, oh, that's awesome, 11:15. I have plenty of time in the morning to like do my thing, feel great, look great, get in with energy, have pep in my step. And so I woke up early, woke up at like 8:30, and for some reason, I just like thought I had all the time in the world. So like there was no one particular thing where something went wrong in the morning for me to be late. But basically what happened was like I made eggs, enjoyed my eggs. I took a shower, took a really long shower. All of a sudden, you know, at an 11:15 meeting and it was 10:30 and I hadn't left yet. And so it was 10:30 and I was like, okay, you know, I don't want to take the subway because there could be subway delays. I want to play it safe with just taking a cab. It's okay that I'll pay for it. Where I was staying in the time was in just an apartment in downtown Manhattan, and Morgan Stanley's office is basically in Times Square. So it's a good, I don't know the distance, but it's probably 4 miles to get there, or the equivalent of like 60 blocks. And so I get in the cab and we're going like cruising, things are going well, but we get to 14th Street and just turns into like gridlock. Like no one is moving. We're sitting in the same spot for 15 minutes, have moved basically one wheel turn, and it gets to 11 o'clock and we're still on 14th Street. And I'm starting to bug out. I'm in my full suit. I have my backpack. I literally have everything on me. So I just decided to literally get out of the cab and sprint to the office. So in full suit with bag, I sprinted 28 blocks and ended up making it to the top floor by 11:15. And the way it was set up is, there were basically two rooms. There was like the waiting room for all the interns to wait for their exit interview, and then the exit interview room. And I get there and it literally looks like I just full on took a shower. Like just I was confused and like went into my shower and took one. And so I was an absolute mess, dripping. The waiting room had like all this breakfast and coffee. I just like did a straight beeline for like the stack of coffee napkins. And so I effectively had like 30 coffee napkins, like the like 2x2s in my hand, and I was just dabbing myself, like getting like the dab wipe throw out. And I got through most of the napkins, and HR person walks in, and at this point it's like 11:19, and I get in there, and I remember HR person's name is Farah, and I'm like, Farah, I'm so sorry, like traffic was horrible. And at the end of the day, it was completely my fault, but I was like, traffic was horrible, I'm so sorry I'm late. Of course HR is smart and they just know that everyone is going to end up being late. So the 11:15 time slot they gave me was actually an 11:30 exit interview because they want to make sure people are there 15 minutes early. And so just the long story short is I get into the room. I had built a really good relationship with the HR and like my boss. And so they were just giving me shit the whole time, like telling me I look disgusting. My boss made someone go grab a box of Kleenex so that I could like dab myself as they're talking to me. And just the culmination of this whole experience was they gave me an offer, passed me my dark blue manila folder that had my offer in it. And as I'm thanking everyone, being like, it was such a great experience. I had thought that like I had stopped the sweat stream, but I didn't. And literally to like end the meeting, as I'm saying thank you, like a bead of sweat just starts rolling down my head, like down my cheek, down my chin. And just, it literally felt like slow-mo, just bead drops off my chin, splatters on the dark blue manila folder. Everyone sees it and they're like, okay, meeting's done. And that was it.
That is an awesome story.
Yeah. So the long story short is don't be late for things, or don't sprint in a suit. And don't expect a stack of coffee napkins to actually dry you off.
That is great. I'm actually happy that was the random question.
Yeah, and I was going to say not a very quick answer, so I apologize for not
honestly
quick answer the quick fire.
None of these end up being quick. Never, yeah. Never once. Second one is, what skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college to become successful?
Passion for the work they do, deep intellectual curiosity, where you're always asking why. A lot of people think they obtain expertise in things. Very few people actually know how to become experts. Asking the question why and forcing yourself to do it, I think, will get people in the habit of learning more about things than they thought they could learn about them. And I think just at the end of the day, like, deep work ethic and being a pull employee, not a push employee. And what I mean by that is not making people push you where you are reactive to the things they ask you to do. Being a pull employee that volunteers to do things when they're not asked of you and pulling the entire team with you.
That's a good answer. I think a lot of people need to really take that to heart. Well, then the third one, it really just feeds into the success realm. What do you believe needs to be sacrificed to become successful?
Your ego. So I think you learn humility. I think the biggest thing that I've learned is, obviously, there's a level of confidence that you have when you run a business, but I think overconfidence is one of the things that ultimately can be the DNA for why a startup fails. Like, in the sense that there are a lot of things that cause startup failure, issues with co-founders, losing energy in the business, poor hires, not having a sound business model. But I think a lot of it originates from overconfidence and greed and thinking that not only you're God's greatest gift to earth, but also that you think you've learned everything there is to know. So I think at the end of the day, like, leaving your ego at the door, knowing that you are far from perfect and there are so many ways you can get better every day, and also being excited by being told no and not thinking that people saying no is their fault, not yours, taking it to heart and understanding how you can turn that no into a yes, to me is incredibly important. So I would say leave your ego at the door. You're never as good as you think you are, not to not have confidence in yourself, but to have the level-headedness of always looking for ways to get better.
Cool. What is one life hack business professionals could really try to apply to their life this week?
I mean, this is a very simple one, but from the hours of 9 to 5, I turn off my phone. So my phone will not be on from 9 to 5 because I believe there just are so many distractions. I'm naturally someone who gets very distracted. So I try to put myself in an environment where I know I am removing those distractions, the things that distract me, like social media, texting, calls, people talking in a room that cause my attention to divert. So I'll not only a lot of times not work in our main team's office because I need somewhere that has quiet where I can't be distracted by other conversations. But from 9 to 5, I'll turn my phone off. I'll have my Apple Watch on so I can take calls. But other than that, I'm not turning my phone on during basically working hours.
That's intense.
Yeah.
That is intense.
It is intense until you realize most of the stuff that happens on your phone, you can deal with before 9 o'clock or after 5 o'clock. And the amount of work that you get done not focused on your phone it makes it worth it.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate the time. It's an absolute pleasure. And I hope the Likewise. Morning brew keeps becoming enormous. And I can Thanks say so much, that man. I talked to the man at the beginning.
Love the support. And I appreciate you having me on.
All right. That episode was definitely as good as I said it was at the beginning. You know how this works. Some reminders before I let you go and enjoy the rest of your day, night, morning, whatever it may be. If you aren't already subscribed to the Morning Brew Business Newsletter, do it now, okay? Go to the Morning Brew and make sure you subscribe. So that's morningbrew.com. You can find it at morning, spelt out like morning, brew, brew.com. We'll also put in the show notes. So click on that link, subscribe. Trust me, it's well worth it. I read it every single morning. Anyways, number two, as Alex said, to become successful, you need to sacrifice your ego. Sacrifice your ego this week, all right? Do it, love it, enjoy it. Thirdly, most importantly, this week, every day, turn off your phone for at least 3 consecutive hours while you're working. You will be amazed with your increase in productivity. I know I need to try that. I'm going to start today, and maybe next podcast, I'll give you a little update. I hope all of you had an amazing time listening to this episode. and we'll see you next week.